The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Several birds are dying for unknown reasons, an unknown disease, and wildlife experts are getting very concerned. They're saying if you have a bird feeder, they want you to take it down. Does that include the bird baths too?
You know, this disease, which is still unknown, by the way, a lot of experts say it could be easily transmissible in birds, and it's why they're asking people to take down their bird baths and bird feeders for the time being.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that is a strange story that was reported by NBC4 in Columbus, and I want to fill you in on just this strange quirk of nature. But first, I want to say welcome to you. It's good to have you with me this afternoon. Thanks for joining me. I've got an announcement for you coming up after the chaplet today. It's something I want to make available for you, okay? So if you can join me at 3 o'clock and pray the chaplet around, well, right after that, wherever you're listening, it would be, of course, 3:30 in the Central Time Zone, 12:30 in the Pacific Time Zone, 4:30 in the Eastern. I got that right, Jake? Is it Eastern? Yeah. You could go ahead and get plugged into what I have to offer, okay? And I hope you'll join me. All right, so that's coming up. Stay with me. Next hour, we'll pray the chaplet. Right afterwards, I'll fill you in on something very exciting. All right, so stay with me on that. Hey, I want to send a shout out to the founder, the owner of Belgioso Cheese. You know, I had a call from a man named Arico Arricchio, and he's a member of an order that I'm a member of, and he was also a former board member here at Relevant Radio, and our paths crossed. He said, "Let's have lunch, Drew." And I'm with this guy. I got to say, I just love it. I have not had a good Italian meal like I just did this afternoon. I went and met him before the broadcast, and you know, we went to his house, and boy, they had everything from, you know, calamari to sautéed fish to all sorts of incredible vegetables and just great food, just wonderful, wonderful food in general. And it's good. It brought me back. You know how memories, how food, how times taste or smell can bring you back. They say that smell's one of the strongest memories. I guess triggers of memories that you can have. Maybe you remember, your mom making homemade chocolate chip cookies or your grandmother's mothballs in her closet or whatever it might be, right? Well, you know, this guy is from Italy. His wife is from Italy. And I'll tell you, the food was just incredible. It brought me back. I felt like I was at my grandmother's table eating, some great Italian food. So, Arico, if you're listening, thank you, brother. It was great hanging out with you. And, it's one of the great pleasures of life, isn't it? Good food. Love it. Hey, we got a lot to get into this afternoon. I know Father Rocky is going to be stopping by a little bit later. And, of course, I want to bring you up to speed on some of the latest. If you're trying to buy a car, I hope you'll stay with me, too. These car prices are ridiculous, aren't they? I mean, you can't get new cars. Used cars are through the roof. So if you're saying, yeah, Drew, I need a car, or my car's on the fritz, or should I buy a new one or use and stay with me a little bit later, Jeff Sardina is going to be stopping by. We'll get a hold of him. And maybe you're having problems with friends. We'll dive into that day and a whole lot more. But let me fill you in on what's going on with these birds right now. This is a strange, strange story. We know we've had record heat, right? We just experienced unbelievably crippling heat on the West Coast. And we've had tropical storms, and of course, nature seems to be intensifying and very well be related to the change in temperatures as well as the oceans warm and things along those lines. But there's something unusual happening with birds on the East Coast. USA Today was reporting last week that in several states, birds have suddenly become disorienting and then they died and they have no idea. Birds in Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, Maryland, Virginia, West Virginia, the nation's capital, they've all suddenly shown strange neurological symptoms and strange symptoms with their eyes. So one ornithologist said that her colleagues, this is what they're saying. They say they report crustiness around the eyes. They report some of them bugging out, right, bulging with swollen eyes. And then they've had reports of the eyes being kind of sunken in. So it's all over the place. It's a strange story, but NBC4 reported on it in Columbus. They took a look at it. I think you'll find this very telling. Listen to this.
Since the start of this month, the center has identified multiple cases of an unknown illness in songbird species across central Ohio, the symptoms of which include a white crust in birds' eyes, leading to blindness. as well as damage to their nervous system, leaving them unable to fly.
So we're not seeing it in our ducks and we're not seeing it in our hawks, but we do see it in birds like crows or birds like mourning doves.
The disease has also been identified in several states, including Virginia, Delaware, Maryland, Indiana, and West Virginia. And experts are asking for the public's help in preventing its spread.
We're asking people to take down their bird feeders, to stop feeding for a couple of weeks, and that our hope is to maybe stop the spread of whatever disease this is.
And if you do happen to encounter a bird with these symptoms and wish to bring it in for treatment, they ask that you wear proper PPE when handling them.
We always ask people if they find anything injured, ill, or sick, that they can bring it to our wildlife hospital. So if you see a bird with like crusty eyes or maybe a bird that's unable to fly or has some neurological issues, we're asking people to always wear gloves when handling any animal that's sick, to put it into a box and bring it to our wildlife hospital.
That's a bizarre story. Well, there you go. If you are listening in this area, make sure that you follow that advice. They don't know really what this is. Jake, you said you had a story?
Well, no, I'm hearing about this, and I'm thinking of The Birds, the movie from Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know me. I love Alfred Hitchcock movies. It's kind of sounding like the premise of that. Most people have seen The Birds, but just in case someone hasn't, you know, it's like where the flock of birds just start attacking random people, supposedly because of, you know, neurosis problems, you know, among these species. And I don't know. It's just a little, it's got my mind rolling a little bit. I wonder if Alfred Hitchcock is up to something in heaven. You know, maybe he's orchestrating something here that we don't know about. So.
But there's always these strange diseases, too. You got to take seriously, too. Like,
exactly.
You know, deer wasting. What's that? I'm trying to remember that. Deer wasting disease, and there was bad cow, and there's all these different things. I mean, it's crazy. But, you know, speaking of Hitchcock, because, you know, I've studied film, he and King, Stephen King, the author, right?
Yep.
I am struck by both of their gifts to take something as beautiful and even as harmless as a bird and make them terrifying.
Yep.
You know, you take a look at Children of the Corn. I mean, when does a cornfield become
creepy.
Terrifying? When is Cujo, a dog? Well, a dog, I guess, can be kind of terrifying. What about a car? I mean, your car. Why should you be afraid of a car? Christine was another one. I mean, King was just brilliant at it. But I often wonder where he got his inspirations.
But the thing about The Birds, though, from Alfred Hitchcock, my theory on that movie is that, yes, the birds are scary and creepy, but I also feel like the movie is kind of a statement on general humanity at its worst.
That's true.
Because it's not so much, in my opinion, the birds that are really causing all of the suspense. It's the way that people react to it and turn against each other. So I feel like a lot of those like scary horror movies also show the way that humans can really negatively react to unfamiliar situations.
Do you like horror movies, scary movies?
Not so much like the blood and gore, demonic stuff. But like I said, I love Alfred Hitchcock because he really plays upon the psychological suspense of.
So you like psychological? Yeah,
they're
good.
Yeah,
I agree. I'm not. You know, I mean, blood and gore doesn't scare me. That's not really scary to me. It may be suspenseful. I hate those demonic ones.
Yeah,
like the Conjuring.
You're messing with something that's real.
Horror and
right.
That stuff is creepy.
Well, and Hitchcock was, I don't know if he was like a practicing Catholic throughout his whole life, but he was raised Catholic, I know. And one of the really good Hitchcock movies that has Catholic elements is I Confess.
Yep.
I think I've told you about that movie
before,
where, you know, it's about a Catholic priest who's framed for murder, but because of the fact that he heard the confession of the guy's murder and he's framed, we can't do anything about it. So it's kind of cool to see Hitchcock's origin of Catholicism playing out in some of his movies, too.
Did you know the name of that movie? I don't remember.
I Confess.
I Confess his name. People should look it up.
It's so good. Although Hitchcock did say he regretted making the movie because, well, most of the viewers weren't Catholic, and then they didn't understand why the priest had those convictions. They didn't understand the seal of confession and why the priest acted the way he did. I personally think it's a phenomenal movie and one that every Catholic should see. It only makes you love the priesthood more.
Maybe there's a director listening right now in L.A., in Hollywood. Maybe you remake that and just fix what Hitchcock failed to do and maybe work into the script, you know, why a priest is so convicted over the seal of confession.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he really portrayed the priesthood well. You see so many movies now that negatively depicts the priesthood. I think he did it well.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, that's a great movie. I Confess. I've never seen that movie, Jake.
Oh, you got to see it.
So I've got to watch it. I got to try to track it down.
And the black and white element adds something to it, too. And the movie was made before Vatican II, so the way that they depict the mass, you know, ad orientem, it's a really interesting look into the past of Catholicism as
And plus, what a brilliant filmmaker Hitchcock
was. Oh my gosh.
You know, a pioneer.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. Well, that's good stuff. If you want to join us anytime, we'll give you the number here. It's always good to talk with you. You can sound off, share your views, your own experiences, and just be part of the conversation. You know, I love talking with you. It's 888-914-9149. Just another news story or two, and I'm going to invite a man on the air with me today under an alias. We'll call him Jack Snow. All right, he's got a powerful story to share with you. He'll be joining me in a few moments. But, you know, I often call us to pray for our country, and the Washington State Supreme Court, they ruled, and I don't know if we talked about this briefly the other day, or well, a couple days ago, that last week there was the closing session of the Supreme Court, and they revealed that they declined to take up the Barnell-Stutzman case. And I don't know if you remember that case or not. That's the one where the florist from Washington State was sued. You know, years ago, because they wouldn't do this floral arrangement for a longtime customer of hers and was getting, quote, married to another man. So, you know, what the Washington Supreme Court ruled was that she had to pay fines and that they would close down her business and even can result in this woman losing her home. If you don't know a lot about this case, this is something that I want to put before you just because I think it's important for us to be aware of. Just to be aware of the rising threat to religious freedom in our country. And I feel like I'm a prophet crying out in the wilderness sometime. You know, before the Obergefell decision, you know, I tried to warn people what the bad fruit of that decision would be. You only had to look back at the decision for contraception and no-fault divorce, and then you saw the bad fruit, of course, of Roe v. Wade, right? We see the chaos and confusion. Obergefell, the redefining of marriage in this country, certainly did the same exact thing. Well, Washington State Supreme Court, they ruled you know, against her. She's going to pay fines. Her business will be closed down. Might even result in her losing her home. And hopes have been placed that the U.S. Supreme Court would take her case, but they didn't. And that meant that they, you know, couldn't get four justices to agree to take it. And Justice Thomas and Gorsuch and Alito, they all wanted to take it. They wrote a powerful dissent, and a number of people expressed disappointment. You know, neither Brett Kavanaugh nor Amy Coney Barrett, right? Both supposedly good Catholics would join them. So, you know, I hope that Barnell's vindication comes in some sort of other way. I mean, God has a way of working things out. I mean, that's for sure. Here's a bit of good news. Let me give you this as well. In Louisiana, and I was actually a little surprised when I saw this, something unusual happened. The state Senate there, they issued a resolution recognizing this as the year of St. Joseph. You got a state Senate, the state of Louisiana, recognizing the year of St. Joseph. They recognized May 1st as St. Joseph the Worker Day. Copies of the resolution were sent to Father Calloway, a great Marian friend of mine, a great priest, Father Michael Champagne, Archbishop Gregory Amond of the Archdiocese of New Orleans, a number of other bishops, too. The bishop from, I think, the Diocese of Lafayette, the Louisiana Conference of Catholic Bishops, the governor of Louisiana. Certainly, I think great news, and I think Louisiana is going to be blessed for entrusting, you know, their state to St. Joseph and honoring him in that particular way. You know, do we need the protection, the paternal protection of St. Joseph? There's no doubt in my mind we need it, and we need to really pray for our country today. There's a crime wave that is sweeping through a number of major cities in our country. You know, we talked right after the 4th of July about what we saw, right? The 4th of July was unbelievable. CNN reported, I think, 150 people were killed after more than 400 shootings. You know, Chicago bore the brunt of it. Stay safe there in Chicago. There were 100 shootings. 18 people were killed. Sounds like a war zone, right? Sounds like a war zone. This is the United States of America. This is a beautiful city. It's getting so bad right now that New Yorkers have actually selected an ex-cop, right? The president of the Bronx Bureau to be the Democrat candidate for mayor, and more than likely he's going to win the race. And the platform, you know what he ran on? This is why he won. I'll tell you right now, absolutely why he won. The citizens of New York do not like the rising crime, the empty stores, the blight. He ran tough on crime. That's why he won. So whether or not something similar will happen in the Windy City, that seems to be the big question right now. ABC 7 in Chicago will fill you in on just how bad things have gotten in the city. Listen to this.
Merciless gun violence is crippling Chicago streets and stripping lives away from families. Tonight, fingers are spinning in each direction, pointing at who's to blame.
The courts have created an unsafe environment for large crowd gatherings because you've released people charged with murder back into these same communities where they committed this heinous crime.
100 people were hit by bullets in Chicago over the holiday weekend. 18 of them didn't survive. Arrests and prosecution are reactionary. Pastors and activists want proactive help to prevent crime, and some say the problem is beyond city leaders to solve, at least alone.
The numbers show, the deaths show, that the policing strategies that are in place are not working. And it is absolute insanity to keep doing the same thing and expecting different results.
Southside Alderman Anthony Beal agrees. He's proposing National Guard troops deploy in Chicago's downtown temporarily.
Free the officers up that are downtown, that were taken out of the communities for downtown. Put those officers back in the community where we need them the most.
That goes along with his idea of investing in so-called violence interrupters.
We need proactive measures.
Like activists in South Shore who declared a block-by-block peace treaty. That neighborhood didn't suffer a single homicide on what was otherwise a violent long weekend.
So let's hope things cool. I mean, big city crime is a reality. It's not just Chicago, not just New York. There was a judge that ordered the city of Minneapolis actually to hire more police officers after a major crime spike. But look, we knew this was coming, right? We talked about it. When you defund police, this is what happens. The Hennepin County District Court judge in Minnesota there ordered the city to employ at least 730 police officers by the end of June of 2022. So they got a little bit of time. They got to start ramping up. I don't know how many people want to be a police officer today. It's a dangerous job. The city is expected to only have, 699 officers after they've had a battery, just an exodus of retirements and resignations and extended leave. You know, I've got a friend I work with, and his brother became a police officer recently. He's getting out. Minneapolis has experienced a surge. I mean, a tidal surge in violent crime since their attempts to defund the police last summer. I was watching news this morning. I saw people looting a store in San Francisco, you know, because you can steal anything under $1,000 and it's not a crime. All right, I need a new charger for my phone. I need a pocketbook. Really? There's a new poll that shows that 40% of San Francisco residents are planning to move out of the city in the next few years just due to the quality of life. And it's not just crime. It's what's happening on the streets. It's the drugs. It's all of that. The San Francisco Chamber of Commerce, they did a poll, and they showed that 8 out of 10 people said that the crime increase in the city and the homelessness, almost 90% said that homelessness has gotten so bad that they're leaving. 3/4 of the residents said their quality of life has diminished. And that's some of the most expensive real estate in our country. They are exiting. They are leaving that city. You know, I heard a commentary. I think it was over the weekend, or I read it somewhere. I think it was Greg Gutfeld or somebody who wrote it. But he had such a wonderful point, you know. And look, I don't want to be political here on this, but I do want to talk about policy. When Trump was in the administration prior to the Biden administration, you know, the media and people loved to target Trump, but they can no longer use racism now to defend these liberal cities, right? These liberal cities are descending into violent madness, and those corroded cities are still getting worse. And it's been months since Trump has been out of office. You know, it tells you, you know, it was never his fault to begin with, really. And they laughed about the riots. Do you remember that? Do you remember when people are looting stores and burning buildings? They're like mobsters, you know, saying to a shopkeeper, you know, better do what I say. You know, I hate to see if anything happens to that storefront window, right? That's what we're seeing. The media never bothered to question the big lie. Never. And it's you know, maybe you can focus on the real terrorists, right? I mean, when when the Capitol was breached, right? Oh my gosh, Dems bailed out looters in Minnesota and in Portland and all over the place, New York. But they sentenced a grandmother to over 100 hours of community service for standing around the Capitol. I'm not making any excuses for the Capitol. I just want to show you the different worldviews here, right? So what's the root cause of this, right? Why are we seeing such violence in our streets? Is it racism? Black Lives Matter marched, Antifa marched, right? It was all about racism, right? Well, I would argue it's not, you know? Racism is not the root cause. Crime is rising. People are dying. What's the cause? I'll tell you what the cause is. It's these liberal policies. That's what it is. The spike in violence that you're seeing, and you might be in one of those cities right now. Where are you seeing it, first of all? Let me just stop on that point. Where are you seeing the rise in this type of violence? Huh? In liberal cities, right? In liberal cities. If that's not cause and effect, what is, right? The Dems reject law enforcement and any actual prison time, and then what happens? You saw it. You saw what happened to all these protesters, all these looters, all these arsonists. They've decriminalized crime, especially property crime. They threw out bail. They called it reform. They want to defund the police, right? Let's, quote, reimagine policing, right? They grew increasingly more brazen, the people, when they realized there's no consequence for their action. And you know what? Police got demoralized, and they said, it's not worth it. You know, they're throwing Molotov cocktails at police cars. The police are getting beaten and shot. And I don't blame the officers. I don't. It's a noble, heroic job, and I want to thank any law officer who's willing to be honorable and uphold the common good. So now what are we left with? We got a befuddled president. We've got progressives. We got extreme liberals on one side pushing for even more defunding, and we're seeing the bad fruit of this. We are, you know, Biden now and a lot of the Democrats are saying, "Hey, wait a minute, you know, let's use leftover COVID money. Let's do that to fund cops. We can do that. It's the Republicans' fault, right? It's the conservatives. They didn't want to support this in the COVID bailout bill. That's silly. I mean, it's absolutely silly." You know, the problems are solvable, right? The problems are solvable. The Dems treat the American people like they're groupies, Gutfeld said, and I thought it was such a great line. He says, they'll always be there when they need you, you know? When they no longer need you, they don't care whether you live or whether you die. Those are strong words. They're not mine. Those are Greg Gutfeld's who said that. But he says, there'll always be more groupies. But I think there's a lot of truth to that, you know? So, all right, let me grab a call or two. I only have a minute here. Do I have time? I don't even know if I have time. Do I have time for? All right, let me get Mike in here very, very quickly. Mike, you got to make it super quick. I only got about a minute. Good afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, we just had another incident a couple nights ago in the uptown area of Minneapolis where you had people doing donuts in their cars and a guy sitting on the passenger side window shooting his gun in the air, and I'm not sure if it made national news, but it's cascading out of control. And one critique I have is that you call these liberal cities, they're no longer liberal, they're left, extreme left wing. Yep. And I think there needs to be a distinction between the two of them.
That's a great point. Hey, Michael, thank you. Stay safe there, okay?
Yep.
I'm grateful for the call. And I didn't see that story, by the way, of the person firing off the weapons. I don't know if it went national, but I'm grateful for the call. He's right. Look, we just got to get our cities back. We need law. We need order. We need rational thinking. These policies aren't working. We've seen it, right? We've seen it. And this is not a political statement by me. I hope you don't interpret it as such. It's an American trying to be rational, trying to be sane, trying to uphold the common good. I've got to take a short break. When we come back, let's change gears. We'll talk about maybe something a little lighter, something that will resonate with you personally. And stay with me. In 30 minutes, we'll pray the chaplet. After the chaplet, I want to share something with you, okay? I've got something that I think is going to bless you, and I want you to have it, okay? So stay with me. 3:30 today, I'll get you plugged into that. But I'll be back. Don't go away.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line.
For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Feel like you're trying to make sense of everything happening in the world? We'll connect you to some clarity. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's so good to be with you today. Thanks for joining me. Feel free to dial in anytime. The number here for you is 888-914-9149. You know, I always try to give you a look at life you're not going to find anywhere else from what's happening in the culture. Try to give you a perspective that I hope is rational and clearly thought through to those issues that affect you on a very personal level, whether it's finance or family or relationship or your faith. And I came across a couple different stories just in recent days. And look, I tend to be an extrovert. I have lots of friends. I like friends, right? I like people. I like to talk. I'm always a little bit stunned when I see that after this long period of COVID, a lot of Americans now trying to get out or trying to rebuild and reconnect to their friends. There's been a tremendous loss of friendship for a lot of people. And I don't know where you are right now. We talked about this too around the elections. Remember, I'm always amazed at lifelong friends who disown their lifelong friends because of their political positions, right? Oh, you're voting for so-and-so. You can't be my friend. I'm blocking you from Twitter or from Facebook or whatever it may be. There was a woman who once gave me just such great wisdom. She told my wife and I this. When she talked about friends, we were telling her about a group of friends that we had that we used to always love and how things change, right? And she says, you know, God sometimes allows friends to come in to your life for a reason, for a season, or for a lifetime. And you might have those lifelong friends. You know, you might have had friends that came in to help you out that time of difficulty, and they were there to help bridge that gap or came in at the perfect moment. Maybe they're there only for a season. Maybe they were friends when you're just raising your kids and life has moved on now, or maybe you moved to another location. I always thought that was pretty profound, very simple advice, and you could remember that. God sometimes gives us our friends, you know, for a reason, for a season, or for a lifetime. There was a survey that went out recently, and it took a look at the social landscape and how friendships are changing. And men are faring particularly poorly when it comes to friendship recession. The percentage of men with at least 6 close friends fell by half since 1990. And the study also found that the percentage of men with any close friends, it jumped from 3% to 15%. So I want to talk about this. Monsignor Charles Pope actually wrote an article. He wrote a blog. And there were some other articles. I looked at the study. He wrote an article called On the Necessity of Friendship and the Loss of It in Our Time. We put it up on our Twitter page. You can find it at Drew Mariani Show. And I'd love to hear from you. I mean, how's your friendships? Did COVID change things? Did they hurt, you know? He writes about how many Americans do not have a large number of close friends. And I don't know. Maybe Monsignor will be able to answer this for me. I don't know what the number is. I mean, how many really close friends do you have? Is it 1? Is it 3? Is it 5? Is it 10? I mean, can you count on you know, 2 hands, your closest friends, those you could call up at any time for any reason, know that they'll be there for you, no questions asked? Close to half of Americans report having 3 or fewer friends. So that's a small number. And again, Jake and I were talking about this as we were getting ready for the broadcast, and he asked me, you know, is it about quantity, Drew, or is it about quality? You know, is it about quantity or quality? Let's talk about it. Let's talk about the necessity of friendship. Do we need friends? How important is it? And why today, in a time where I think you need friends more than ever, why are we seeing a loss in them? I'm joined this afternoon by none other than great Monsignor Charles Pope, and you can check him out online, and of course, feel free to join the conversation here. Monsignor, welcome. It's good to have you with me. Good to talk with you today.
Yeah, good to be here. Thank you.
And I say this to you all the time. I tend to say it off the air to you, but I always appreciate your writing. I do, because you're always hitting on something. I say, wow, that was insightful, or oh, man, that was a great point, or wow, what a great observation. This is one of those great observation moments. And I came across a few of those studies, and they could be kind of dry, and I thought, oh, that's kind of interesting. But you put such a nice spin on it. Let's talk about it. maybe you can talk first maybe about the necessity of friendship. How important are friends in our life outside of our family? And what are we seeing culturally today regarding the lifeblood of those friendships?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the necessity of close friends, you know, let's distinguish between a friend and an acquaintance, you know. Even Scripture says, let your acquaintances be many, but your close friends be few. Not maybe as few as you were just mentioning, but in other words, but you know, friends are necessary, I think, for us in a way that our families are and should be, but aren't as often today because they're so small. But we, you know, when you had 4 and 5 siblings, you rub off on each other. and also with friends, you know, a good friend is someone who knows just about everything about you.
Yeah.
And they're able to tell you when you're full of it and get away with it. Or they're able to console you in ways that someone else can't because you know that they're going to speak the truth. And so, as I say, I think what we're talking here about are those closer, deeper friendships. And they're harder today because we're so mobile and our families are smaller and people move around, as I say, jobs and the demands of just life. You know, even if you don't move around, you're running around a lot, you know, in traffic and... We're all, you know, so we get a little isolated. And then you add to that all the things that being plugged in has done to people, you know, that's living true. In little silos with yep. Virtual friends. But remember, the original meaning of the word virtual was sort of like, but not really. You know, I was virtually, right. I was virtually beside myself, you know.
Yeah, right.
You know, but, yeah, so it's...
Yeah, it's a wonderful point, though, because I've said it, too. We have never... been more connected, you know. You used to have a phone, right? It was connected to the wall, or you know, it was in your home. You didn't have one in your pocket or your purse, right? You weren't able to use it while you were traveling 65 miles an hour down the highway, right? We are more connected than ever, not just through the telephone, but through, you know, your Twitter, your Facebook, and all the other social media apps that are out there. And yet, we are seeing higher levels of anxiety. We're seeing increased loneliness at a time where you know we should be better connected. What is it about that? I mean, and why are we, you know, what are we seeing in terms of COVID? I thought COVID would have strengthened the bonds of friendship. You could Zoom, you can use those social media platforms to stay connected. What happened over the past year, and where are we heading as you see it?
Yeah, well, I think we're heading to further and further isolation. It also explains, I think, a lot of the rise of a lot of idiosyncrasies in our culture, where people just get weird and do lots of weird stuff, and we're all supposed to, you know, just do whatever, go along with whatever they want to do. Whereas I think friendships and family relationships had a much stronger influence years ago. So we're heading toward, I think, you know, lots of, shall we say,
pathological?
Yeah, pathological things, you know, sociopaths and others who are just very, just not connected to other people, don't seem to know their feelings or care, and they don't feel connected. No. And or understood. So there's somewhere in there we all have to have that person and place we can go to say, here's someone I can kind of pour out my concerns and I won't be rebuked or hated, or but I will be told the truth.
Yeah, you know, I know you wrote in your article about what St. Thomas says about true friendship. Why don't you share that with everyone too? I think it's such a great book. What do the great theologians, the great thinkers, how do they view this? And how is friendship in terms of a gift from God?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Even before quoting Thomas, you know, all the great philosophers, Plato, Aristotle, all the, you know, they all said, you know, that friendship in a certain sense is the greatest love because in marriage, you know, and in that type of love, there's a lot of tension. And some people will tell a close friend what they won't even tell their spouse. But it's we have to see that there's something very, very special about friendships. So here's what Thomas says. That there are three qualities. First is a love of benevolence by which we wish good to another person. But also the second thing is mutual benevolence. So a true friendship would have both parties, if you will, bringing blessings and so on. It's not an unbalanced relationship. There's reciprocity, if you will, or you know, in the relationship. And then lastly, friendship requires, and this is the important one, a community of life. He's the word, Latin word convivere, you know, it implies that people know each other, love each other, and are together, they come together frequently, you know, yep. So that, you know, today with all this moving around, that's harder. You know, you can say, well, my best friend lives in Hawaii. Well, really? that's kind of like, you know, or I've had people tell me even that they were dating someone from the West Coast, you know, and they live on the East Coast. You're like, well, no, how's that possible?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. No, I agree. It's you know, I was my wife and I were thinking about moving at one point in time, and it was just, it was a, you know, with the difficult part of that decision quite often is the friendships that you have, you know, and the faith life that you have, even with those friends. Like, we were able to pray with our friends. We're able to call them, to travel with them, hang out with them, spend time with them. I mean, they're there for your kids. Or, I mean, they become an extension of your family in some respects. And as you pointed out, they can also really be, you can confide or share some things with friends you may not be able to. With others, and I think friendship is such a blessing. Let's do this, Muncie. We'll take a few calls. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149. Maybe you're going through a difficult time in your friendship right now. Maybe you've been wounded in your friendships. I'd love to hear your story, ask your questions. Mark is in Chicago. Mark, hi, you're on the air with Monsignor Pope. Good afternoon.
Hello. Hi, Drew.
Hi, Mark.
No, I just wanted to... make sure they ask questions so they can make a comment at the same time. Now, in my experience, it seems like at my job, I think I have a lot more guys and everything who are more family-orientated, more closer to their faith, and, you know, they don't always have as much time with friends. You know, I'm not throwing you into that category, Drew. I know you have a million friends, but this is like in my case, everything. I'm always with family. I'm always doing things with family. Now, during COVID, I did spend more time with friends than family because most of my family members were afraid to get together when, you know, it's just like my friends were not. So it's like we would get together with friends more often than not. Yeah. So I was wondering, it's like, is there a correspondence? It's like, is there like maybe a study out there that shows that, you know, more conservative or Christian or, you know, people like, you know, usually... like spend less time and have less friends than more of my liberal counterparts and everything at my job seem to have more friends.
That's great. Mark, great call. In fact, Monsignor, I'll let you follow up on that, but I was reading part of this study a little bit earlier, Mark, and you touched on something that I think is important. In the study that I read, it said that American parents are now spending twice as much time with their children compared to previous generations. And that crowds out other type of relationships, including other friendships. So if you're spending more time with your family, that leaves less time for those other friends. And I think things change. Like when you've got kids, when your kids are out of the house, I mean, there are different things. And Monsignor, as you point out, Americans are working longer hours now. You know, that comes at a cost for friendships as well. But what role does family play in it? What role does one's politics play in it? Because to his point, he was making the case that conservatives tend to be more family-oriented. I don't know how true, if there's any empirical data for that, where he's, and these are Mark's words, that, you know, being more liberal, you tend to have more friends because you're not spending as much time with your family. Your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think like anything, it requires balance. I think that sometimes... in order to be better with our family or our marriages or whatever, people need close friends where they can kind of get aside and talk about other things. And so I think that, you know, it would be a kind of a false piety to say that it is always good to spend time with your kids and your family, but they're all, I think everybody needs a little time to get away occasionally, just be with friends and kick back. And just like as a priest, you know, I have a day off and I got five good priest buddies and we just kick back and we're just guys, you know, and we talk about some of our parish things, but it helps us to be better priests. And I would say, you know, you have to find the balance, but friendship isn't in competition with, it should be in support of being a husband, father, wife, mother, and so on.
All right, my guest today, Monsignor Charles Pope. Let me grab another call. If you want to get in, we're talking about the state of friendship today, and there was a recent American Perspective study that was done, came up with some compelling data. Monsignor also wrote a wonderful piece, and we've linked over to it on our Facebook page. You can go to Relevant Radio, or you can go to Facebook.com, or you can go to Twitter. Where'd you put it, Jake? Twitter? It's on Twitter, right? All right, so at Drew Mariani Show, he's telling me, and he wrote an article on the state of friendship, the necessity of it today. So we'll take a short pause. When we come back, Maria, you're on deck. We'll take your call. And you can get into it right now if you'd like at 888-914-9149.
It's the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. Pray coast to coast, moments away on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
moments away.
Thank you for your ministry.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy.
I truly believe in the power of this prayer.
It's the Chaplet of Divine Mercy.
This program has changed my life.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
We will pray the chaplet coming up here in about 12 minutes or so. Do somebody a favor and just send them a text or a tweet. Send them an email. Give them a call. Say, hey, I know you're going through a difficult time right now. Why not pray? Right? And we'll pray the chaplet together. They can join you wherever they're listening in the country, really around the world, online at relevantradio.com, the mobile app, or by listening to the station you're on. And, of course, you can always try to join me here for the chaplet. I take five or six of the intentions that come in. Love to have you. Hey, I'm talking about friendship today. Monsignor Charles Pope is my guest. If you want to read his article, you can also follow his all the writing he does. I'm a big fan of his. It's MonsignorPope.com. That's MSGRPOPE.com. That's his website. Get plugged into him there. And he wrote a piece just recently on the necessity of friendship and the loss of it in our time. And I don't know where you are in your own friendships, but we're looking at why, how things have changed, what the church has had to say about these things, and how you can cultivate those lifelong friendships. And Monsignor, let's go right to the phones. We'll jump in and say hello to Maria. She's listening in Houston, Texas. Maria, thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Yes, I would like to make a comment about friendship. Let's not forget that not only do we have our friends, you know, the people you have lunch with and chat with, but you also have your family friends. Your sister that you confide in, your grandmother, your mother. We also have our spiritual friends. Let's not forget, we are never, ever alone. Our Lord Jesus Christ is our friend. And we need to spend time with that friend, with adoration and reading the Bible and listening to his voice in prayer. We have our other spiritual friends, even our deceased loved ones that try to speak to us and advise us and guide us. Right. So we are never alone.
I love it.
Many friends.
Thank you, Maria, for sharing that. Monsignor, I'll let you follow up with some thoughts for her as well.
Yeah, well, I want to say I think that she's absolutely right, especially, you know, in our family. I'm very close to both of my brothers, and we share everything. So I think I agree with her entirely. But, you know, some people have family relationships that are strained and things like that. So she also mentioned the other types of friendships, and I think that's all correct. And it's the question is, who can you pick up the phone when you really need? I need to talk to somebody.
That's so true. So Monsignor, I know, you know, in your article you talked about I don't know whether it was a priest or just somebody who worked, the director of a clinic for the treatment of psychological matters, and I don't know whether it was addiction or not. It was an inpatient treatment program, and you revealed something interesting. You want to share that with everyone?
Yeah. Well, you know, he would do an entrance interview with all the clients who would come to the center, mostly priests and religious. It was but some lay people too, and he would say, among the questions he'd ask, do you have some good friends? How many friends do you have? And I have lots of friends. But then their answer would indicate they didn't really know what he meant by friends. And then we'd ask them, he'd rephrase the question: how many people do you share deeply with? How many people on this planet know almost everything about you? Yeah. How many know that you're here at this treatment program and why? Did any of them help you to get here? You know, those kinds of things. And these tended to generate a lot of blank stares. And he began to discover that one of the reasons, not the only reason, but that they were there, is that perhaps their life got isolated and they went to, bad behaviors.
So let me throw a scripture at you. I want your thought on this. All right. Because there's some great scriptures, as you point out. But the number of friends, right? I mean, women have a harder problem. I think women need, I think men and women both need friends. But I think, I don't think men have as many friends as women. I don't know if that's a fair statement or not. It's just in a personal view. In Proverbs 18, it says, a man of too many friends comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Fewer friends or more friends? I mean, how do you view that? And are there different categories of friendship?
Yeah. Yes, and we're talking here about that kind of friendship where you share deeply, and you need someone who's trustworthy, who won't betray you. And that's hard to find sometimes. There is a Sirach 6 also says, let your acquaintances be many, but your advisors, you know, those close friends, be one in a thousand.
Yeah, I love that.
So I think I would say that, yeah, we want quality certainly more than quantity. And having one or two really good friends is, you know, that's might be better than having lots of acquaintances or so on.
Right. Speaking of Sirach 6, and I know you wrote about this, I think it's such a great quote when it comes to friendship. A faithful friend is a sure shelter. Whoever finds one has found a rare treasure. For a faithful friend is something beyond price. There's no measuring his worth. A faithful friend is the elixir of life, and those who fear the Lord will find one. Great, great quote. Mm-hmm. Letty is listening in California. Letty, good afternoon. You're on the air. Hi, Letty. Go right ahead. Hey, Jake, is Letty up? Hang on one second. Is Letty there? Is her fader up? Letty, you're with us? All right. I'm not hearing anything there, so I am going to put her back in queue. And Monsignor, I only have a moment left, so rather than me take any more calls, let me just give you the final thoughts here right now. And again, your article is posted on our Twitter page, and I know they can find it at your website as well.
Yeah, I think we cannot just continue to just underestimate the idea that having friends is not that important. I know a lot of people, you know, we do need this. This is part of what God expects of us. We're social by nature. And most of us have, you know, a lot of acquaintances, you know, we'll chat with, but we just, all of us, I think, need people we can confide in who are both trustworthy and truthful.
Right.
And this helps to complete us. And God, if you will, gives 99% of his gifts, not just directly thrown out of heaven on the top of our heads, but rather he gives, you know, I'm going to say maybe 99, but how about 95% of his gifts come usually through somebody else.
They do.
I don't know where I'd be without my friends today. I mean, they've helped me to avoid innumerable stupid things and keep me honest. And it's a great thing to have good friends. And I have a couple of very good lay friends and about four or five very good close priest friends. So,
well, keep writing, Father. I appreciate what you do. I'm about to pray the chaplet, so I'll remember you in my prayers. And thanks for being here with us today. It's always good talking with you.
Good. Thank you.
That's Monsignor Charles Pope. You can check him out online. It's SMGR, MonsignorPope.com, SMGRPOPE.com, and check out his great writing there. Look, I only have a moment or two left, and I just, again, want to remind you to join me for the chaplet coming up in about 4 minutes. And I often think of what St. Faustina said. I spoke to a beautiful couple in Arizona a couple of days ago, and they were very touched by a section of the book that I wrote about how the Lord really has commanded us to pick up and continue this work of mercy, to continue to spread devotion to his mercy, to be and witnesses to it, to live lives of mercy. And at the same time, he told St. Faustina promised she would continue her mission after her death. In fact, she said her mission would not end, but it would only begin, that she'd pull back the veils of heaven to convince, doubting souls of God's mercy, and so that we would never wound him with our distrust. And I know St. Faustina is interceding in a very powerful way for all of us. We'll turn to her in a second here and really ask for her intercession. But the Lord also promised anyone who spreads devotion to his mercy, he would bless in a special way. He would protect like a child, like a tender infant, like a mother, her tender infant, and that in the next life you shine with a special brilliance. So I often say, tell one other person about the chapel. Just say, hey, you don't have to preach. You don't have to tell them about anything else. I don't know what their politics are, but just say, hey, look, it's a great time for us just together to gather for 30 minutes, and we will pray, because there are a lot of people joining together right now, you know, and we'll take your calls and your petitions as well. At 888-914-9149. If you're new to the show, it's 888-914-9149, and I take a few of the petitions there. Coming up after the chaplet, I've got something I want to share with you. I'm excited about this. I think it's going to be a blessing to you. I've seen the fruit of prayer. You know, I often share the story of my own father, who was a wonderful man. I mean, I can honestly say my father never once even laid a hand on me, ever. I mean, it was more terrified of my mother. God rest her soul. But, you know, he got in trouble. It was my mother, I didn't want to have to say. My father always had my back, right? It was, but he was a man who had flaws, you know, and we all do, don't we? I mean, he struggled with compulsive behavior like gambling, and then it turned into alcoholism. But prayer, and especially prayer of the rosary, brought freedom from his addiction. It broke the chains of those addictions. And I think about the rosary as I do the chaplet. I love both of these prayers deeply. I pray in both. I was praying my Luminous Mysteries on the way into the studio today. Pope Adrian VI, he once said that the rosary is the scourge of the devil. It's the scourge of the devil. And you know, Padre Pio, I often quote, because I love him. I have one of those great sayings. I prayed at his tomb many a time. It bore the wounds of Christ. He would pray, they say, 36 rosaries a day. He'd say to his fellow friars, he'd turn to those guys whenever, you know, there was an issue or something somebody asked him to pray for. And he'd say this. He called his rosary something very interesting. He said, get me my weapon is what he calls me. He called the rosary his weapon. The rosary is the weapon. Get me my weapon. Get me my weapon. And he'd pick up those beads and vanquish the evil one. And, of course, we saw the tremendous fruit of his life. It is a powerful prayer, just as the chaplet of divine mercy is. So let's turn to prayer right now for our country. Let's turn to prayer for you and for those needs that seem impossible. And I know sometimes when we are in the midst of a problem, there's a surgery, there's a battle, there's a division, there's something going on that just seems insurmountable or unhealable or irreconcilable. Prayer has an unbelievable way of transforming things, all right? So we'll pray when I come back.